Broadcasting in English.
Hello and welcome to Radio Prague's weekend program with me, Jan Richter. Coming up in today's show, in Czech books, we look at the life and work of Edith Pargeter, an English writer who translated many Czech classics. Then the first installment of a new series dedicated to Czech film and TV industry. And later, we bring back our popular miniseries from the archives. So please stay tuned for all of that. This week would have been the 98th birthday of Edith Pargeter, an English writer who translated many of the Czech classics. You may well have come across her under the pen name Alice Peters that she adopted for much of her fiction. Under this alias, she created two of the most famous fictional detectives in 20th century crime writing, Sergeant George Fels and the medieval monastic sleuth Brother Catfell. In Czech books this week, David Vaughan explores Edith Pargeter's special relationship to Czechoslovakia.
Edith Pargeter spent nearly all her life in the county of Shropshire, on the borders between England and Wales, and much of her writing draws from the area she lived in. But her other great love was Czechoslovakia, and this led to a fruitful literary relationship that lasted nearly 50 years. Here are a few lines from her translation of Bohumil Hrabal's classic short novel of reluctant wartime heroism, Closely Observed Trains. The scene is a small Czech town just before the end of the Second World War, and a German plane has just been shot down.
The wing itself went on hovering over the town, and everybody who could stood and watched it, right to the moment when it swooped lower with a creaky motion just above the square. All the customers came tumbling out from both the restaurants as the shadow of this wing hung rocking above the square, and everybody who was watching it went rushing across from one side to the other and then back again to where they'd been standing a minute before, because the wing kept on swinging like a gigantic pendulum, sending them all scuttling in the opposite direction from where it looked as if it was going to fall, and all the time it was grinding out a crescendo clatter and a whining song. And then suddenly it hurtled down and crashed into the deanery garden.
It took considerable craft and ingenuity to recreate Hrabal's brilliant and inventive prose in English, and Edith Pargeter showed similar mastery with many other Czech writers, both past and present. She first visited Czechoslovakia just after the Second World War, and this was when she met Jiří Edelman, a young Czech who was to remain a close friend for the rest of her life. He remembers her first visit.
It was in 1947 when there came a group of English people to Czechoslovakia. It was something what they called summer school. I think it was organized by the Workers' Education Association, and some Czech people joined this party to be companions to these English people. And at that time I was visiting some courses of English, and I've heard about this possibility. Before Edith left, she visited also my family for, let us say, half a day. And when she left, we started corresponding. She was very much interested in everything. And she was asking me more and more questions to tell her how it was during the war, what we were doing, how the things were here, and so on.
And it was actually at that time when she came in 1947, which was just between the end of the war and the communist takeover. So there was a degree of openness, wasn't there, in Czechoslovak society?
Very much so, because that was the last time of open society here, or how to call it.
The outcome of that visit and Edith Pargeter's subsequent correspondence with Jiří was the novel The Fair Young Phoenix, in which the phoenix was Czechoslovakia itself, emerging from the ashes after being abandoned by its allies at Munich in 1938 and then occupied by Nazi Germany. It opens with a poem dedicated to the Czechoslovak Republic, which in its final couplet describes Czechoslovakia as a fair young phoenix rising out of the pyre, having the mocking eyes of his murdered sire. Edith Pargeter's love of Czechoslovakia went back to the time of the war itself, when she served in the Women's Royal Naval Service, the WRENS.
It was something like, I think, Navy headquarters in Liverpool, and I think that she has, let's call it, fallen in love with a Czech, I think it was either Air Force man or soldier, who didn't come back from the war, and she didn't speak very openly about this, but I know that she wanted very much to come over here and to find what's actually Czechoslovakia and what are the people like.
So it is no surprise that Edith Pargeter followed up her first visit to Prague in 1947 by coming again a year later, this time for a full 3 months. The trip was organized by Jiří Edelman and his father and included a stay in Slovakia. The outcome was a second book, The Coast of Bohemia, describing her impressions of traveling through Czechoslovakia. This was 1948, and by this time the communists had come to power.
After her stay, she always thought I would be able to come over to see England, but that wasn't possible. The things have changed rapidly, and she also wasn't able to come over because in those days it was very difficult to get visas. At that time, she started to learn Czech and to find out more about the books that she has seen in our households. And so it came that she started translating some of the classical Czech literature.
The fact that Edith Pargeter was able to go on to publish so many Czech writers in English owes much to a lucky coincidence.
At that time, she was publishing at Heinemann's, and there she found that the managing director was somebody called John Beer, and it was again a Czech who came to England with the Jewish children before the war, and John Beer helped her to publish the Neruda book. So this is again how the Czechs come into the story.
The Neruda book that Jiří Edelman is referring to is the 19th century classic Tales of the Little Quarter by Jan Neruda, who has often been described as the Czech Dickens. The stories evoke the atmosphere of life in Prague's ancient streets in the first half of the 19th century. Here are a few lines from Edith Pargeter's translation of the story, A Week in the Quiet House.
The morning sunshine of June had been lighting up the courtyard of the house for some time before the inhabitants awakened. In spite of the din of the traffic which penetrated to the court through the passage and over the roofs from the street, the first footsteps still resounded as loudly as in a vault. Singly, as though one waited for another to depart, women folk went out from the various flats, with hair dishevelled and still uncombed, or with shawls low on their foreheads to shield their sleepy eyes from the sun. There were not many of them. They all appeared to be rather sluttish maidservants. Their clothes were not even properly put on, down-at-heel shoes dragged at their feet. In their hands they carried jugs, either empty or filled with milk.
From Jan Neruda, Edith Pargeter went on to translate other 19th-century classics, and her translations of The Grandmother by Bozena Nemtsova and the great romantic poem May by Karel Hynek Mácha went on to become classics in themselves. Her translation of May manages to preserve both the rhythms and the rhyme scheme of the original, and has an unusually natural flow for a poetry translation, as we see in these few lines from the opening section of the poem.
In shadowy woods, the burnished lake darkly complained a secret pain. By circling, shores embraced again, and heaven's clear sun leaned down to take a road astray in azure deeps. Like burning tears, the lover weeps.
As we heard with the extract from Bohomil Hrabal at the beginning of this program, Edith Pargeter also translated 20th century writers. They included Ivan Klima, Ladislav Vančura, and the poet Jaroslav Seifert. During the Prague Spring of 1968, she was awarded with the Gold Medal of the Czechoslovak Society for International Relations for her services to Czech literature. But after the Soviet invasion, things became much more difficult. As she put it, "I was continually walking a tightrope in order to avoid harming people I only wanted to serve." In the meantime, Edith Pargeter's parallel career as a world-renowned detective writer, under the pen name Ellis Peters, was booming. Before long, her most famous characters, the monastic sleuth Brother Cadfael and Sergeant George Fels, also became known to Czech readers. Jiří Edelman again.
These stories get translated and they were quite loved by many people. And in those days when Edith started this Cadfael stories, she was very much, I would say, living in this history, because she had to do quite a lot of studies, and she did enjoy her great success. But she all the time was living very, very, I would say, modestly. Only thing that she has changed was her new house, because in the old house she couldn't live anymore because she had a fall and has damaged her spine. So she moved to a more comfortable house, and there she lived. We spoke about it because in those days I was already more often able to visit her. We spoke how to name this house, and I've been telling her to name it Cadfael House, but she refused that because she thought that too many people would be coming and she wouldn't have peace for her further work. So she named her house Troja. That was because I'm living in a part of the town that's called Troja.
That's actually where we're sitting and talking now.
Yeah. And she thought that I would be feeling there like at home. Actually, there is another quite interesting thing, at least for me. When she changed her name from Edith Pargeter to Ellis Peters, so she has shown this name just to show that is another period of her work. And she has chosen this name because her brother was Ellis. So that was the Ellis. And Peters was because my daughter is Petra.
And so your families really have been very close.
Very much so, because later when it was possible, so she used to come perhaps twice per year, and always once with her brother who was driving their car through the Europe, they came over here and stayed with us. Actually, it influenced all my life and the life of all my family. Actually, my granddaughter is called Edith, just to remember that Edith was something like an auntie to our children.
Edith Pargeter died in 1995. She would have been 98 this Wednesday, the 28th of September, aptly enough, on the feast of St. Wenceslas.
That edition of Czech Books was by David Vaughan. You're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. Coming up next, Peter Smith presents the very first of a new series focusing on the film and TV industry in the Czech Republic. Over the next few months, Peter will be meeting many of the personalities, whether actors, directors and producers, responsible for making the Czech Republic one of the world's major film locations. In the first Screen Czech, Peter speaks to Matthew Stillman of Stilking Productions about why the industry risks losing many big-budget film and TV projects to emerging players such as Romania and Hungary.
Hello, I'm Peter Smith, and you're listening to the very first edition of Screen Czech, the monthly show devoted to film and TV production here in the Czech Republic. And as this is the first show, I'm just wondering if any of you have grabbed the significance of the opening theme? Nope. Well, answers before the end, I promise. Now, in the next few months, we'll really be getting to grips with one of the most influential exports here in the Czech Republic. Not beer, of course, that would be breaking studio regulations for one thing. I'm talking about filmmaking. Closely observed trains, the house on the main street, Collier, and even Amadeus. American money, granted, but a Czech director, Czech crew, and Czech locations. All those films testament to the traditional talent and diversity of the film industry here in the Czech Republic. And over the next few months, I'll be bringing you news about the industry and interviews with the people most closely involved, both Czech and foreign producers coming here to work. There'll be a rundown of all the latest movie news coming up towards the end of the programme, but first, a look at a controversial issue that threatens to derail foreign investment in the movie and TV industry here in the Czech Republic. Tax. Yes, tax. Tax breaks and state cashbacks on expenses are now some of the key elements when it comes to shooting any film or TV project. However, the present cashback incentive scheme on offer to film producers here in the Czech Republic has been described in some quarters as inadequate and even endangering the future of the industry. All a far cry from those heady days after the 1989 Velvet Revolution, when Western filmmakers were queuing up to shoot in the then Czechoslovakia and at Prague's renowned Barrandov Studios. I recently spoke to Matthew Stillman, boss of Still King Films, and someone who's been involved in the film industry since those post-revolution days. I first asked him what first attracted foreign filmmakers to the country.
The overall message was that you could create more value here. It's cost relative to all the elements that you need to make films or videos or commercials. So it's things like the crew, their skill, their depth, can they do stunts? Are they good? Is there good wardrobe? Are there good ADs? Are there good sound people? All sorts of different things. Was there good studios? Were there physically good places to shoot, locations? Combination of all those factors together. You need a certain amount of infrastructure to make films. Those things together with basic things like hotels or whatever, the house people, are the essential things that you need to make a film. If you have those things in one place, you can do it anywhere. At the time, there were very skilled crews in UK and US. But here, there was a will and there was a desire and there was an energy, and that combined with the natural advantages and the historical advantages that existed in the Czech film industry meant that through the 90s, the Czech industry was able to grow into one of the top two or three in the world.
But filmmaking is now truly an international industry, and all the studios worldwide are in effect competing with each other. So, incentives are imperative. The Czech Republic does have a 20% cashback scheme in place. Sounds good? Well, not quite. Matthew Stillman again.
There's 20% back, which started about 18 months ago. But the problem with that is there's a limited fund. So this year it's $18 million. You can get 20% back, but once the $18 million is exhausted, that's it, which is not a large amount. So that caps the amount of production that can come in. Second problem is that it has to happen on an annual basis. So it's only available, $20 million is only available for 2011. And you have to apply for it, shoot your film, audit your film, and claim the rebate within those 12 months. And almost no films happen across a calendar year. So on two levels, it doesn't really work.
Yes, big productions such as Mission Impossible and the James Bond epic Casino Royale were indeed filmed here. But are future opportunities being squandered?
And actually, they've lagged behind what other states have done, because as the Czech Republic became more successful, it reached a situation 2003-04 when the rest of the world became envious of the situation the Czech Republic had, and they started at that point offering, other states started offering grants and incentives to attract filmmakers, and still, as we sit here today, we're trying to figure out, get money from the state for next year for incentives, a proper regulated program. So the Czech state has fallen quite a long way behind the speed and the dynamism of the industry internationally.
And as Matthew Stillman explains, certain film projects are indeed in danger of being lost.
There's a Henry V that we're trying to do for the BBC. There's a Brad Pitt film for Paramount. There's several, but they're all contingent upon money being available as an incentive, because their other options all have incentive money available. And at the moment, we don't have a clear commitment that there is money available for the end of this year and the beginning of next year from the government. Unless that comes, they'll go to alternate places.
And what with other countries catching up fast, the Czech film industry must learn to be competitive again. And it must learn fast.
5 years ago, Czech Republic did five times more than Hungary. This year, Hungary will do five times more than the Czech Republic. Hungary's providing 25% rebate on the money that's spent there. UK's providing 20%. So everywhere's providing these places, and the Czech Republic is not adequately. And they're providing a program which doesn't function. It can't function because films are not made in 1 year, and they need to have the security of knowing. The Brad Pitt one wants to start at the end of this year and shoot next year. So does Henry V, the BBC one. They need to know that the incentive is available at the end of this year and next year. Hungary, they know it's there. UK, they know the money's there. Australia, US, all the US states have the money now. So, yeah, we're not competitive because we're unable to be competitive with the other countries in terms of what they're offering.
Matthew Stillman there of Still King Films. And I should say that I contacted the government about the incentive issue, but they declined to comment. Quickly to film news. Several international TV films and series are currently being shot in the Czech Republic. First up, the shooting of the 10-episode American TV series Missing is underway in Prague and the surroundings until October. The story centres around a mother, played by Ashley Judd, who searches throughout Europe for her missing son. The crew will spend in total more than 90 days shooting in the Czech Republic, along with a few days in Croatia and in Istanbul. Next up, the film Die Kastellanin, or The Castellan. The story of a young woman, Maria, set at the beginning of the 19th century, is being made for the German Sat.1 television station and Austria's ORF, with filmmaking taking place at Kripoklat, Tochnik and Kokosin castles. The production is being arranged by Germany's TV 60 München in cooperation with the Czech Republic's Vilma Film and Barrandov Studios. The 48-hour film project finally comes to Prague on the weekend of October the 21st. Filmmakers from all over the Czech Republic will compete to see just who can make the best short film in only 48 hours. Get a move on. The winning film will go up against films from all around the world. So that's all for Screen Check for this month. But before I go, did you get the music reference? Yes, from the start and the end credits of one of the greatest movies ever made in the Czech Republic, Miloš Forman's Amadeus. So until next time, from me, Peter Smith, keep watching.
The very first part of our new series, Screen Check, was by Peter Smith. Now we have a rerun of our popular series From the Archives by David Vaughan.
During World War II, the political left in Britain and the United States had come to identify itself strongly with the fate of the Czech nation. This was partly a reaction to the shame of Munich in 1938, when Czechoslovakia had been abandoned by her allies, and it was reinforced by the role played by the British miners in launching the Lidice Shall Live movement. This had followed the Nazis' destruction of the Czech mining village of Lidice in June 1942. In this spirit, the president of the British Miners' Federation, Will Lowther, came at the end of 1945 to lay a wreath at the grave of the men of Lidice.
Speaking on behalf of the British miners, we pledge ourselves that we shall do all that lies in our power to see that the motto for which we were responsible, that the Lidice shall live, shall be accomplished as a living reality, so that future generations shall enter this holy ground with memories determined to say to it that never again shall such a foul deed be perpetrated amongst anyone.
That was the miners' leader, Will Lowther. Another representative of the British left who came to Czechoslovakia, this time in October 1946, was the playwright, novelist and broadcaster J.B. Priestley. He spoke of his impressions.
I expected to find Czechoslovakia looking much more damaged and shabby and dingy after its experiences of the last few years. I thought the country would be only just beginning to recover and that everything would look far from being normal. But I was pleasantly surprised right from the first to discover that you're much further on in your recovery than I would have thought possible. Although the signs of battle can still be seen on some of your roads, such as the abandoned and shattered German war vehicles, the war has been left behind and the whole country is going ahead at a fine speed. People here seem to me to be full of vitality and hope and a good public spirit, ready to face the future with confidence and showing all the signs of that fine spirit which made Czechoslovakia one of the model democracies of the pre-war world. In addition to that, I've found in many of your young people, both intellectuals and workers in mines and factories, a grand socialist enthusiasm based on a firm belief that we're now capable of creating a society based on social justice.
J.B. Priestley was speaking just 6 months after parliamentary elections in Czechoslovakia, which had seen the communists emerge as the strongest single party. Underestimating the malign influence of Stalin's Soviet Union, Priestley was hugely confident in Czechoslovakia's future.
I believe with all my heart in socialist democracy, which is what we're trying to create in Britain. And as you are engaged in the same task and a little further ahead of us, I want to come back to see how far you've got and to see if we can learn anything from you. Already I know that there are some things you do better than we do, in the mines, for instance, and I only hope that more and more we can not only enjoy each other's company, but can go on learning from each other. And now, please imagine I'm shaking hands warmly with all of you, as I say, thank you for letting me see this fine, brave, democratic country.
At the time J.B. Priestley was speaking, Czechoslovak democracy had just over a year to live, before the hardline communist coup of February 1948.
That edition of From the Archives by David Vaughan brings us to the end of today's show. We're always happy to get your comments and questions, so do get in touch. The address is Vinohradská 12, 12099 Prague 2. You can also send us an email at english@radio.cz. From myself, Jan Richter, and all of us here at Radio Prague, thank you very much for joining us, and goodbye.
vous écoutez Radio Prague.